Welcome to our paranormal afterlife. This is our paranormal afterlife, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. And if you want to hear the extended version of this episode, please join the Patreon campaign. This week, I'm talking to Lynn McGuinness about her book, Overcoming Adversity by Embracing the Higher Truths, One Woman's Journey to Spiritual Awakening. Lynn's path led her to confront the ultimate fear, death, by discovering the transformative truths of near-death experiences and reincarnation, compelling her to seek out the world's foremost authority, Dr. Michael Newton, for a Life Between Lives spiritual regression session. Hi, Lynn. Thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for having me.
We're going to talk about your book. It's called Overcoming Adversity by Embracing the Higher Truths, One Woman's Journey to Spiritual Awakening. How did this all start for you? Was it when you were a child that you had no interest in this at all?
Well, it's not that I had no interest. I didn't know about it because my parents were atheists. And when you're a child, you believe whatever parents tell you. And so my parents were physicists. They worked for Rand Corporation and then their own corporation. They were theoretical physicists. And I have two brothers, and they told us that there was no God and that God could not be scientifically proven. I was born in 1956, and so my parents went through the Holocaust. They're of Jewish ancestry, and they looked at God as a man in the sky concept of God rather than as an energy. They would say over and over, if there was a God, he, the male pronoun, would never have let something like the Holocaust happen, so there could be no God. And that made a lot of sense to me as a kid, because I went to a camp, and I don't know why, but they showed us footage of the Holocaust. I was about 10 years old, and yeah, why would any God let this happen? And once, when I was a little older, I was reading some books, and I said, what about the soul? And I think my dad said, you can't see a soul. There's no scientific proof of that, so that doesn't exist. And so that was sort of my way of looking at it until I was about 36 years old.
But you did have some mystical experiences, didn't you, when you were a child?
I had mystical experiences, and I had no way of knowing that they were mystical experiences. I had some interest in it, and as I say in my book, the first thing that happened was when I was very small, and it was earlier than I remembered, and this was only because I had a childhood regression at one point. From the time I was almost born, I thought I was a boy, and I started having dreams that I was a boy and that I was in an operating room and somebody did an operation and turned me into a girl. And I told my mom that I was a boy, and I told her about this operation. I told my parents, and they said, you know, they had a lot of things they thought were wrong with me, and that's another story for later. And they said, you're not a boy. What are you talking about? There was no operation. And I insisted and I insisted. And I guess they finally talked me out of it. And I know people have this experience because they're gay or lesbian. I'm not gay or lesbian. I learned when I saw Michael Newton that I was a man in my most recent past life, and that I had died fairly young, and that a lot of my lives had been as men. And then I understood why I was saying that. As a kid, my parents' youth thought it was evidence that I was needed a psychiatrist. And I had also fought with other kids. And at age four, they sent me to a child psychiatrist. I also had other mystical experiences. I had dreams that I was flying, And I don't know if they were dreams or out-of-body experiences because they were so long ago. But I would elevate above my body, and then I would fly away and over past my fence and over the neighborhood and over the other houses. I had experiences where I would look at the stars and just say, I know there's something else out there besides human beings. I know there's more than this. And I had experiences where, of the same line, where I knew that there was something more, and I thought, I was sure a spaceship would land in our yard. And I think I was a little older, but I was still young. I read, I think it was the Wrinkle in Time books. I know I read those. And I loved the idea of time travel. And, you know, time travel, it just fascinated me. And dimensional travel. And in one of the books, I think it was the Wrinkle in Time, they talked about a Mobius strip. And it's, I describe it in my book, and I don't remember the description I gave. But I looked at this and I said, yes, this is the way we travel through time. You can travel through time. And I just knew that. And I never told my parents about that. So by the time I was about 5 or 6, except for maybe the Wrinkle in Time books, I was couldn't share the experiences with everybody. And so it kind of faded out.
I suppose with parents like that, then the last thing you're going to want to do is talk to them about it.
No, yeah, the last thing, and it wasn't until May of 2025 when I did my second Life Between Lives, well, actually my third Life Between Lives session, that I learned why my soul had actually chosen those experiences. But as a child, yeah, you don't, what your parents tell you is gospel as a small child. And it made sense. And since I knew nothing beyond the intellectual, it was an intellectual explanation and it made sense to me. But it was also scary.
The thought of death as being a total annihilation and you have no existence afterwards is particularly scary, isn't it?
It was very scary. And the first instance I remember, and I talk about this in the book, I don't remember when I started getting afraid of it. I think around 10 with those footage of the Holocaust. And as a kid, I was so scared, I would have panic attacks. So as a kid, I would just say, well, I'm only 10. By the time I'm 60, humanity will be so advanced that they'll have invented a pill and everybody will live forever. And then that just comforted me as a kid. And then, as I mentioned in the book, I had an experience when I was an unhappy kid for a lot of reasons. I was always unhappy, it seemed like. And then when I was 13, I was in New York visiting family and I had the panic attack again. And I gave myself the same story and it didn't work because there was even more panic when I thought, I'm an unhappy person. I don't want to live forever. And then I was bouncing back and forth between annihilation and being unhappy for eternity. And it was really, really scary.
Was it that a friend of yours gave you Raymond Moody's book? And that's how you got an interest in near-death experiences?
Yeah, well, before that, I got married at 22. And my husband wasn't really a churchgoer, but we visited his family and in another state. And his sister and I were talking and we were both 22 and somehow religion came up. And she asked me, do you have a certain religious philosophy? I won't name what it is. And I said, no, I'm not. I don't even know. My parents are Jewish atheists. And she said, well, when you die, you're going to hell for all eternity. And I asked her, do you mean to tell me that all people who don't have this philosophy are going to hell, even if they're good people? and good people are going to hell and bad people aren't, if, you know, people who have done evil, as long as they have this philosophy. And she said, yes, that's right. And then I asked something like, and there are a number of questions, and I asked, are you telling me that a serial killer will go to hell if they adopt this philosophy on their, as they're being executed, but a person who does serve humanity won't? She said, yes, that's right. And I told her, that's ridiculous, and you know, that makes no sense to me. And she said, well, that's what the Bible says, and I hadn't read the Bible. And that scared me even more than eternal nothingness.
Oh, yeah.
So, and it made no sense. And I was still in my intellect, so it made no sense. So I went back to eternal nothingness. So what happened with Raymond Moody's book is when I was 30, and it was near my 30th birthday, 1986, it was a couple of years later, I was driving to work to do something actually fun, and the death thoughts came back, and I panicked, and I was in the right-hand lane of the freeway in Southern California. And my car careened, I lost consciousness, and my car careened across the freeway into the median divide. And next thing I know, I was in my car across the median divide. And for reasons I understand now and I can get into, nobody was hurt. But you would think that would be a wake-up call for me. It's time to turn your life around, look into this. I did not let it be a wake-up call. I spent another 6 years of self-pity and fear. And then in 1992, at the age of 36, I started in some 12-step programs. You know, I got the nudge that I needed to look into spirituality. It was time to stop just believing my parents, and I knew about 12-step programs. And in one of those programs, I made a friend. I think her name was Lisa, but I'm guessing it was a female friend. And I went to her house, and she was the first person I told about my fear of death. And she said, well, what do you think death is? And I told her the two alternatives that I was given, and she said, those aren't the only alternatives. And I was surprised. I said, they're not? That's all I've heard about. And she said, well, I have a book. Will you read this book? And I said, of course. And she gave me Raymond Moody's book, Life After Life, about near-death experiences. And I was just spellbound. I can't say I'd never heard it before, because a friend said something years ago, but it didn't mean anything to me. But I couldn't stop reading books like this because it was just incredible to me. It opened up a whole new world.
Yeah, it's because the consciousness leaves the body, and some people see something and then talk about it when they come back. And people confirmed that that thing happened. And it's kind of proof that consciousness continued even though their body was dead.
It is proof for me. I mean, there's still some, no matter how much proof we have, there's still too many people, for my opinion, because I really think the world could use a global spiritual awakening in these troubled times. That's just my opinion. But there are still people who stick to, no matter what proof there is, including shared death experiences, who say this is all brain chemistry, which just surprises me. I mean, the types of experiences, how those could be brain chemistry is beyond me. Especially a couple of people like the neurosurgeon Eben Alexander and Anita Morjani. Some of those people have had these elaborate experiences that go well beyond anything the brain could fabricate as the person is dying.
And the Pamela Anderson case, where they know she was definitely brain dead and her heart had stopped, but she was able to recount what the surgeons did while she was in that state.
Yeah, those are wonderful because they're what's called veridical or verifiable. people will talk about, well, you were in the next room and you were talking about what you were wearing, this and this and this, and you were talking about whether you were going to put my shoes on my feet before you took me back to the house if I were to wake up. And they just come up with all this detail, not only of what the surgeons were doing, but what people in the next room were doing, with details across the country, you know, across continents. If they have a brother in another country, and they tell the brother, you are on the phone trying to get plane tickets to come out to where I am, and all of this is correct.
It's the verifiable side of it, isn't it?
Right. Just like, you know, as I was reading the near-death experience books, and I may be getting ahead of what you want to ask, but I started reading these, and so I started looking for more and more in books, and I saw books on reincarnation, and I knew nothing. I said, what is this, basically? I haven't heard of this. So I started reading. I think the first one I read was Many Lives, Many Masters by Brian Weiss. And as I read it, I said, wow, this makes sense. Nothing else does. And so I finally understood. And the reason I bring this up is there are also verifiable reincarnation stories. Unfortunately, a lot of the past life stories, the events are too obscure to be tracked down. But now I'm finding, you know, just by following it, that children are having more past life memories. And because the events are more recent, they're more verifiable. Like, for example, I've heard children talk about being in the September 11th terrorist attacks on the New York City. And they've described specific people and where those people were and what those people were doing. And now we're able to verify a lot more experiences because they're in the more recent past than hundreds of years ago. So that's nice to see. It's not nice for the kids because the kids have to be taken out of the trauma, but there are more verifiable stories as we hear children talking about them.
I've talked to some people on the podcast who research this, and they get in such detail and such depth. And they're the slightest little details that the kids couldn't possibly know.
Yeah, and kids also make statements spontaneously when they're about two or three. I was your mommy before, and things like that.
You had a car crash. In the book, you talk about the exit points. There was some incident with a plate of glass, wasn't there? They didn't kill you, and you think because that wasn't one of your exit points?
Yeah, I honestly believe that, and this is a belief because I didn't experience it. I honestly believe that when we do our pre-birth planning as souls, we know when we're going to leave the body, transition to the spirit world, or die from that body. And we plan that. And this is my belief again, not an experience, that we plan more than one possibility. And I don't know how many people differ on this, and I'm not even going to speculate. But that when there's the last one, we're going to die or exit the body no matter what. We won't go beyond that last one. So, for example, if we plan to die in a car accident and we say, I don't feel like driving that day, we're going to have something else is going to happen. We're going to have a heart attack or something. On the other side is things happen, you know, not every tiny little event is planned. It's a general blueprint. We have free will. So that if we have an instance that could lead to our death or the death of another, and that's not a planned death date for anybody, or that's not a planned serious injury for anybody, there'll be intervention from the spirit world. Spirit guides, or some people call them, say, angels too, will make the event not fatal. So when I, in the plate of glass incident, I was had four people in the car. We were driving to a track meet on the freeway. We were runners, and we were right behind a truck, and a huge plate of glass went flying in front of my car. I was driving. It just came right at us. And all of a sudden, that plate of glass like went right by us, and I don't think it hit anybody. In the car accident, it was rush hour on the freeway. And I was driving at the speed limit, which I think in the 80s was 55 miles an hour. And your streets are reversed, but for us, I was in the opposite, the steering wheel's reversed, the streets are the same. So I was driving on the opposite side of the freeway from where the median was during rush hour traffic. And I remember that because I remember feeling panicky and getting over that to that lane saying, I've got to get off at the next exit and off the freeway. And I didn't make it. I know the car went across several lanes of traffic at 55 miles an hour. So when people, and again, this is Lynn talking for me, when, you know, I thought about that, you know, just recently, I was writing the book and writing in my journal. And I'm like, and I was saying, well, that was a miracle. I was thinking to myself, it was a miracle. And then I stopped myself and I said, but tons of people get killed in car accidents. Why me? And that's when it came to me that it depends on whether it's an exit point or not. It's not like somebody saved me because I'm special or something. Well, I never thought that, but people aren't saved because I'm special or they're special. It's because of their soul's path.
So there are these exit points in your life plan, and there may be one at 20 years old, one at 34 years old, one at 50 years old. Is it a thing where you have a life plan that you need to achieve something, and then once that's achieved, you take the next exit point? Do you think that's how it works?
I honestly, I have no idea, and that isn't revealed. I can't say nobody knows when they're going to leave the body. I think a handful of people do. But generally, I believe that no matter how many regression sessions we have and how many meditations we do and how many other spiritual awakening tools we use, only in extraordinary circumstances will our plans for our deaths or exit points be unlocked. Because I know for me, if I knew when I was going to leave the body or die, that would affect every decision I make. That would affect every choice I make, when I do what. That would really affect free will. So I feel like I could have 100 life between lives regressions, and the spirit world or the guides and masters only let you unlock what you can handle or are meant to unlock. So I don't think that would be unlocked. So as far as your question, that's an interesting question. I think, I truly believe that everywhere in the world, no matter what anybody's doing and what they're, it's a tough question, because no matter what anybody's experiencing, because many people in the world are obviously experiencing some horrific conditions, and then they die when they're 4 or 5 years old. I think that we come here to for a purpose, a chosen purpose. So some small child may come and die at 5 because they've agreed to do that to teach the parent a lesson, you know, that because they volunteered to do that so the parent can learn something. And when that purpose is served, they'll leave the body. But yeah. At the same time, I could have spent my whole life not listening to the guidance and just spent my whole life deviating from the path. And when it was time, the last time for me to exit or die, never having done anything I came here to do. And then it wouldn't surprise, I'd be surprised if my soul didn't say, I want to come right back and do what I came here to do last time.
And I suppose that's something you talk to your guides about, isn't it? That they would discuss with you how the last life went. And so that helps in planning how the next one goes. And they might say, sorry, you failed. You didn't get it done. You're going to have to do it again.
My experience, and this comes from actually the past life regression that I did that had some historical verification, because that one went into spirit. What I learned in that one, because a lot of people who've had near-death experiences have life reviews where they, and I had this in the past life regression where they experience all the pain they've caused people, all the pleasure they've caused people from both perspectives, their perspective and the person who they've interacted with. The life review I had, and this is called a life review, what you're asking about. The life review I had, because in that past life, and I can tell you what happened more if you want to ask about it, I did the soul as that person did, exactly the opposite of what the soul came to do. So it was not a life where the soul basically did very nice things. So the life review that I experienced, and people in near-death experiences each have their own description of what their life reviews look like. But in this one, the life review was all love. It was nothing but love. It was no judgment. And I have a soul guide that I'm really, really connected with. And, you know, that's the one I'm connected with now. And that's guys been with me since my soul's creation. I went over the life with that guide, and that guide prepared me for the life review. Then I went before a council of seven elders or wise beings, council of elders, Michael Newton called them. And I understood, and this answers your question, I understood when I went before the council of elders that the soul had a choice, absolute free will, of whether to come back and have the opposite experience to balance it out, or what's called karma, or to not come back at all, or to come back and not balance it out. But that in order to make what I called in the regression an informed decision, I would do this life review. And if after the life review, the soul said, I don't want to balance this out, or I don't want to come back at all, that was the soul's choice. And the soul would be unconditionally loved by the council, by all in spirit, no matter what the choice was. But that if that was the choice, the soul wouldn't grow. And the soul wouldn't add to the knowledge of Source or God, because by experiencing, the soul brought knowledge and love back to God.
My book, titled Verified Near-Death Experiences, is out on Amazon. I've gathered accounts where something happened that could be checked, verified in the real world, details seen and heard, when a person was, by all medical standards, gone. I wanted to focus only on those cases where there was evidence, not just stories. The book has had over 50 five-star reviews worldwide, this one from the United States. I have read more than 25 books and watched countless videos, and this book still had new stories. I love the fact that it focused on only verifiable experiences. This is an easy read, and great for those needing proof. If you're searching for careful documentation, honest accounts, and stories that may just shift your understanding of life and what may follow, I invite you to read Verified Near-Death Experiences. Verified Near-Death Experiences is available on Amazon, on paperback, audiobook, and on Kindle.
So then there was the life review. Well, in this life review and the life, the past life regression can be found on my website. If anyone looks up the website, there's a recording of the regression. In brief summary, the soul was a king or a ruler of a fiefdom in the 1250s in the Nordic area. And there was some dispute over some vacant area with another kingdom, fiefdom. And the vacant area was closer to the souls, the kings. My name in that life was Jabbar, and the kingdom was, the vacant area was close to Jabbar's fief, to the other kingdom's area than Jabbar, my area. And because of a number of reasons, Jabbar, or me, wanted to get the land, wanted more power. So I, and meaning Jabbar, led my men, it was men, into this battle in what was a larger war. It went to the other area and fought for the land, won the battle, and I called them in the past life regression the enemy, got this land. A number of people died on both sides, and we left the bodies of what we called the enemy there and took our men back to be buried. And this is important for understanding the life review. I know it's a little long. So when I got back, we had this land, and the war had been going on for over 100 years, the entire war. When we got this land, we had this land, and sometime later, I was in my castle on the top, someplace in the castle with a, and the door was open, and we heard the enemy coming for a surprise attack, closed the door, opened the window, and someone in the enemy threw a javelin through the, or bayonet or something through the window and went through my stomach and killed me. And when my soul left my body, there was the immediate realization that the soul had come to make peace, to bring the sides together, not to perpetuate this conflict. That's not why the soul came. And there was also the realization that there was no such thing as an enemy, that we were all one. So when the soul, before the soul left to go to the light, into the spirit world, the soul, I had a brother, and the brother was going to take over the kingdom, spread like peace, thoughts of peace and peaceful energy over the brother, over the castle, over in the entire kingdom, and the hope. Couldn't interfere with free will, but maybe it would make it so that there would be peace in the region somehow. And the spark was lit in the brother, and the brother was able to make peace in that particular battle. So the soul went to a number of places, but for the life review, as I've just mentioned, sitting in with my spirit guide in the garden, it's a place called the garden. That's where my spirit guide and I always go to reflect and be alone. And it's our special place. I'm sure everybody probably has one. And it's much more than a garden. It's ethereal, so I can't describe it. But it's amazing. And we reflected on the life and the life review. And that's when I got the understanding that the life review would be done so the soul could make it, before the soul made a decision as to whether to come back and balance it out. So we get to the life review, and the seven council members are there. And usually, usually I have three main council members, but there are these four that are a little more advanced that come for life reviews, some life selections, and during important events in whatever life I'm in. So went before the council, and the whatever communication we had was telepathic, and I didn't see all the remember all the communications or describe it. But there's one member of the council that's part of the three also, that's on the right-hand side, and the four were behind them, although they're not, they're ethereal, but you describe them like you describe it the best you can as a human. So the one on the right, who I got a name for in the regression in Life Between Lives in December, I'd already had a name for the guy, and that's a whole other story, which is interesting, but that one is the one who did the communicating. And that one always wears a symbol in the front. And wears is not the right word. But this symbol was symbolic of what was ever happening in the life. And this symbol this time showed a king dead on a horse in front of the castle, like collapsed in front of a horse. And even though that was not how I died, it was representative of how brutal and how silly and how superficial that life ended up being. You know, here's this big castle, and here the king is dead. Like, can't take the castle with you. That's the one in the middle had a symbol. Had like something in front, and I'd seen it during my 2001 Life Between Lives session with Michael Newton, but I didn't know what it meant. This time I understood what it meant. It had a bunch of I can only call them hieroglyphics. They're like squiggly lines. And it represented all of the possible paths the life could have taken, including ones that didn't involve the choices that I ended up making. It was all the possible paths. And the soul understood, could see what the paths were. And then the life review began. And when the life review began, my guide, the energy of my guide, and it's all energy, but was behind me. And then what happened during the life review, and I didn't describe all of it because there was millions of these reviews. For me, a bunch of holographic images appeared one after the other. And I, as a soul, stepped in and out of each image really fast and experienced all, you know, the ones I described were like all the people that died in these wars and what they felt and what they went through compared to the power, the satisfaction, the importance of the power gained by killing this person. And it was so out of proportion, that the pain compared to the power. And it wasn't really, it was probably when I did the life review as a spirit, it was simultaneous, but as a human, I described it. It was in time, but it was not in time. It was in, out, really fast. And there were a lot of these, a lot of pain I had caused people. And then there was, I guess, a pause in the life review. And the guide came up to where my energy was. And the guide sent me unconditional love. And the council sent me unconditional love. And then it was understood that the next part of it was going to be all the good I had ever done, and all the good that, from the perspective of the people that had received those, that good. Guide went back again, and the good started with the time when my mother found out she was pregnant with me as a fetus. You know, she was pregnant with me, and the mother and father were rejoicing. And it ended with the time where the soul was able to make peace by spreading that love after leaving the body. And so then we went through that, and that was the end of a life review. I know that I made a choice to come back because I had another past life where I experienced the opposite of what I had done there. But she ended the session with a life review. She said, what I said is then I go back to the garden with my guide. But I know I chose to experience the opposite and keep growing as a soul because I know what the opposite experience that I experienced was. So that was basically the life review. So it was fascinating. It was really fascinating.
You had a life between lives session with Michael Newton.
I did in 2001, May 9th, 2001.
Could you tell us who Michael Newton is before you tell us what happened with the session?
Well, life between lives, I believe past life regression, and I'll go back a little, has been around, I think, since, I don't know how long. I know from reading books, even in the early 1900s, and I know by the time Shirley MacLaine wrote her book in the early 80s, that there was past lives given to people, and it was usually through trance mediumship or other mediumship. They would not get any information directly. In the 80s, I believe it was, 1980s, Brian Weiss was the main one. He had experience where someone went to a past life where he didn't expect it. And so he wrote a book about it, which he didn't publish until 1988, and then Past Life Regression came out. Michael Newton was a traditional hypnotherapist and a skeptic. He was an atheist. And in 1968, he was hypnotizing somebody. In the early 1960s, he was hypnotizing somebody, and they slipped into a past life, and nobody knew that that could happen during hypnosis in the 1960s. So it was like some kind of pain in their side, and they slipped into a past life, killed by a bayonet in World War I. I think that was it. And he didn't expect it. And he didn't really believe it. But what he discovered by communicating with this person is after that, the pain was gone. Being an atheist and a scientist, he wanted to research this. So he did a bunch of research, and he actually tracked down the individual and the incident they were describing. There was enough history on it to track it down. So he started doing past life regressions. In 1968, he was doing a past life regression on a woman, and she was lonely. She's because she felt loneliness. And during the session, he asked her an innocuous question. He said, well, is there, you say you're lonely. Is there a group of people you usually hang out with and you're less lonely or something like that? And she pointed like out to the wall or something. And she says, they're right there. There they are. And he asked her, who are you talking about? And she said something like, my soul group. And then he realized she had slipped into an even deeper state of awareness. And she had gone to the life between lives, to the spirit world, because most people thought, the prevailing view at the time was that between incarnations, it was kind of a void or non-experience. There was nothing. But this is what this woman was saying. And he was again shocked. So we explored it more, and he was so fascinated, he started studying this to see what people said. And he was able, by replicating what he did with her, to get people into that state where they were into that spirit world. And he had a process. He got people there. And the end of that process was to go to the death date of a past life to say what's... Well, before that, he would take you down. And the whole process is and it's called an induction, and it's very complicated. But at the end, he would... If, let's say, you're 20 years old, he would say visualize a set of 20 steps. And then he would say, have you take down, stop at a couple places in childhood and describe them, that happy places. Then through the womb, he was able to have people describe their womb experiences. And from there, he'd say, go to your most recent past life. They don't do it that way anymore, but that was how he got people there. He'd have them describe it very briefly, go to the death date of that past life, and then say, what's happening? And they'd say, I'm leaving my body. And then he'd say, well, go on from there. What's happening next? He did 7,000 people. He did 3,000 people between 1968 and 1994, and another 4,000 before he stopped doing these in about the end of 2001. He kept this to himself. He did not want to, you know, be ridiculed or kicked. He was in, you know, communities. He didn't know what to do with this, and he was I guess reticent about writing about something he never heard of. And I don't remember if he just decided or people encouraged him, finally decided it was something he needed to share with others. So he wrote a book which was published in 1994 called Journey of Souls, which has maybe 30 or 40 different case studies in it of what he found. And portions of sections of these sessions. And this book came out, and it was very, very, very well received. It fell off a bookshelf practically for me in 1997. And when I read it, it was like I was underlining everything. This makes sense. This makes sense. And he wrote another book in 2000 called Destiny of Souls. And then he wrote a third book for hypnotherapists he wrote Wisdom of Souls in about 2004 with other people. And then since then, other people have put out books about it. But that was who he was. He created what, and I may be digressing here, he created what he called a map of the spirit world. At least for myself, I've discovered that I must have lost the map, because I've seen a lot of things that aren't on the map, that the process is expanded and I don't always follow the map. But it was very useful in creating a model where if he knew where to take people, so that he could, you know, write it out and you know, show the world that people weren't making this up, that it was consistent, and that it was things that people wouldn't otherwise know. So that's who Michael Newton was.
So you had a session with him.
I had a session with him, and I like explaining why, because it's fascinating to me. I studied spirituality from 1992 when I started this, you know, when I decided to do the 12-step program, to 2002 when I took on a job and dropped it all because I wasn't ready for it. I mostly did that 10 years not liking myself and being in my head and not really absorbing it. But there were moments when I did have experiences. And I read Journey of Souls in 1997. And in 1998, I was having all these dreams and visions for about 4 months. And I call them visions because I wasn't really asleep. And in April of 1998, I had one of these. It was the most incredible one. And I know every detail. I know what date it happened, what time it happened, and everything that happened. I was in a room, but there was no furniture or anything. And I was standing facing forward, and it was just me at this age standing facing. I was 42 at the time. And I noticed a figure standing behind me, and the figure was in human form, because I learned later that's what I would understand in 1998. And the figure was a male figure in his 20s with long dark hair, taller than me, very compassionate, very wise. And this didn't surprise me at all, but I had been in these visions, I used telepathic communication. So I sent the figure telepathic communication, "Who are you?" I just asked. And the being answered back, gave me a name and said, "I'm your spirit guide." And I remembered. I was like, oh yeah. And the name was not one we use here on Earth. And it has an unusual spelling for the way it's pronounced, but I knew how to spell it. I didn't have to ask. And then the being or guide pointed to my left and communicated, "Look." And there was like a row of mirrors, and pointed to one. It was me at age 22, or right around when I got married. And it showed me how miserable and materialistic I was. And then pointed to another one and communicated that I should look at that one. And it was me at about the age I'm at now. And I was calm, peaceful, serene, centered. And this goes up to why I saw Michael Newton. And just an amazing, wonderful looking, centered individual. And then the vision ended. So the next day, I went on a hike, and it was a beautiful hike. And I'm thinking, what just happened? What was that? That was amazing. And then I was thinking, I'm never going to be serene like that. That came later. But I wanted to know more. And remembered that I live in Southern California, and I remembered by reading Journey of Souls, the other book wasn't out yet, that you could write to Michael Newton through his publisher, that he was in the Sacramento area. He was in Grass Valley, California, which is near Sacramento. So it was maybe an hour and a half flight, and that he was still seeing people for sessions at his home in Grass Valley, California. So I did that. I wrote to his publisher. And they warned me it would be a long wait because he was the only one doing this. No one even knew about it. And I finally heard back. It was 3 years later. And it was May of 2001, and said, if you could come on this date and this time, May 9th, 2001, I think it was 9 in the morning, then you can see him. And I said, of course I was going to do it. And I was very blessed because I think it was a few months later. I believe it was after the September 11th, but I'm not sure. It may have been a little later that he retired and stopped doing them himself. So I saw him, I think, in the last year he was doing them.
It's been great talking to you. The book's called Overcoming Adversity by Embracing the Higher Truths, One Woman's Journey to Spiritual Awakening. And people can get that on Amazon?
Yeah, it's on Amazon. It's available I don't know if an audiobook is there, but it's on Kindle and hardback and paperback. And as I said, my website and as on there, and I encourage people to go to the website. It's for people who have problems with stress. But even if you don't have, you're perfectly stress-free. The past life regression on there is very interesting. And it has some references of other books. And it's a good way to find out how to have a life between lives or past life regression yourself. And it's also a way to contact me. So just take a look at the website.
Thanks again for coming on the podcast.
Well, thank you, Simon. I appreciate you doing this because I love to reach out to others so they can have their own journeys.
This week, I was talking to Lynn McGuinness about her book, Overcoming Adversity by Embracing the Higher Truths, One Woman's Journey to Spiritual Awakening. If you want to hear the rest of this interview, you can sign up to Patreon. The Patreon episodes are ad-free and are released 2 days before the free versions. You can become a patron by going to patreon.com/ourparanormalafterlife or click on the Patreon button on my homepage at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. And my book, Verified Near-Death Experiences, is out on Amazon and you can get it on paperback, audiobook or Kindle. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.